Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of The Influence Show, a.k.a. The Drinking Show. My co-host tonight, filling in for Kristen Gwynn, is Solomé Anderson. Holy fuck, people, it's Solomé Anderson.
Hi, guys.
Yay. And I thought that I'd start the show out with what's known as an English murder ballad, which was a genre of...
Was that English or Irish?
Oh, well, I believe the band performing it, which is, I should say that it's Shirley Collins and the Albion Band. My okay. guess is Irish.
Yeah.
I have to guess.
That would be my guess, too.
Okay, so it's an Irish band performing an English murder ballad.
Okay.
Yeah, but the reason that we're playing an English murder ballad, which is a genre of music that was popular in the 1800s, is that it looks like England might be leaving the European Union.
Yes, it does.
For stupid reasons and with disastrous consequences. So,
most probably.
Yeah, so these songs, which were written in the 1800s, it was like a common theme that it was kind of like their version of true crime. So when there was like a particularly horrible murder that was committed or a particularly interesting murder that was committed, a lot of the time they would sing a song or like write a song that was actually a cautionary tale about that murder. So picture this as like a cautionary tale about the Brexit and about the UK. So in this particular case, it's called the Red Barn Murder, where somebody impregnated his lover and promised to marry her and then killed her. And then they hanged him for it.
Oh, rough.
Yeah. So if there's any lesson from this, it's don't leave the EU and never, ever open a hell mouth. Which is a common theme on this show.
The hell mouth?
The hell mouth, yeah. We're always worried about somebody opening a hell mouth.
As one should be.
Of course,
yeah. I think someone already has, though.
I don't think so.
I think so.
I don't think it's happened yet.
I don't know, man. Look around.
So, yeah, anyways. So, today's show is going to be interesting audio clips from history and from around the world.
Okay.
So,
pretty general, but
it's super general. Some of it's going to be mysterious. Some of it's going to be a little terrifying.
Oh, okay.
Some of it's going to be very
myself.
Weird. Yeah. Solomé, is there anything that you want to talk about from this week?
I haven't really thought about it, honestly. I guess we could talk about the story I'm doing on refugees. Or
let's definitely start with that.
Okay. Is there anything in the news you want to talk about, Patrick?
No, I'm so depressed. I just want to hide here in the bunker under a bicycle shop in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And make a podcast.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, but I don't feel any better. But yeah, tell the story.
Talk about besides the Brexit?
Your story about refugees.
Oh, I think I talked about it a little bit last time I was on here. But it's hopefully being published this week or next week.
Any specific details?
In foreign policy. The details are it's a story about refugee adolescents in Lebanon, like a rash of suicides and suicide attempts. Mm. And it's super depressing, but
that's okay.
That's the topic.
Yeah, we cover almost exclusively depressing topics here.
So, oh, good. I'm in the right place.
Yeah, you're definitely in the right place. It was an emergency. I needed somebody to co-host a show with me, and that's why I asked you.
Oh, good. I'm glad to bring a little joy into everybody's
yeah,
life.
Yeah, so continue with the joy and tell us a little bit about your article.
So it's about that. And the problem is that there are over a million registered refugees in Lebanon, and the circumstances they live in are very, very dire due to government regulations and a lot of, in my opinion, bigotry on the part of the Lebanese government. The Syrians are denied the opportunity to live economically independent lives, and most of them aren't going to school. They're just stuck in limbo while their country just self-destructs, and the kids, especially the younger ones, just don't see any hope for their future. So there has been an uptick in suicide attempts.
Just this past week, there was a really, I guess, a very well-known Syrian dancer that threw himself out of a seventh-floor window in Beirut.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, and he wrote this suicide message that was just insanely passionate on his part, I guess. But he basically said, like, I want to see the destruction of like every regime from starting with Bashar, and it was it's a bizarre thing. There's videos of him on online dancing, and it's incredibly depressing.
It's a really horrible situation. I mean, overall, and in many ways, as a reporter, you don't know what to say to these kids because it's like, what do you say? How do you make a child, who 12-year-old child who swallowed rat poison because she wanted to relieve her mother of the burden of feeding her? What do you say to that child?
There's no bedside manner.
No, it's just that there's nothing you can say because her life, I mean, it's horrible. She's 12 years old. You know, the rate of prostitution and rape and child molestation and all those things that are going on. I mean, the Syrians are a very vulnerable population. People prey on them. Mm. There was recently an incident in which, like, I think 50 Syrian girls were rescued from a brothel in Junye. By Beirut.
Yeah, so
that?
That's what's so interesting because you hear a lot about the ISIS sex slaves, which is, I mean,
no, this wasn't
which
ISIS.
I understand, yeah, but I'm saying, but I mean, the sex slavery under ISIS is endemic, but in Lebanon, in like normal Christian parts of Lebanon, also is.
It totally is, which is why Lebanon is such a fucked up place. But the thing is, these women were being held in a hotel. I think there were 50. I mean, don't quote me on that, but there were a lot of them. They were chained. They were electrocuted, beaten, forced to have sex with over 10 men a day.
One of those casino hotel things?
I don't know. I think it was just like a rundown, you know, ramshackle. It was a brothel, but sex slaves. I mean, they weren't there of their own volition. So, I mean, you know, that's just one example. It's just that these are a very vulnerable population. And, like, sadly, for a 12-year-old girl, and she's very beautiful, like, frankly, I would be shocked if it hasn't happened already.
Yeah. Under those circumstances, and when people are vulnerable like that. And I think that's what's – I mean, if to bring it back, what's currently ongoing with the referendum in England, that's what I think is so incredible, that there's just something so very vile. Like, you know, if a soldier, like, loses an arm or something like that happens, you know, I think, oh, it's terrible, you know? Or if, like, Donald Trump was to, like, spontaneously ignite, you know, I'd be like, wow, that's unfortunate. You know, that doesn't do any good.
And it makes everything worse, and, but, like, am I crying?
And looking at him scream and, like, his fat crackle with the heat is upsetting to me, you know, and, like, it doesn't make me feel good and it doesn't make me feel like I'm a man, you know, in any way, and it's just horrible. So I you know, seeing that sort of thing would certainly disturb me, even with somebody who I consider to be evil.
Right.
But
– because it's your – because you have a conscience.
Right. And I would look at something like that. Like someone spontaneously combusting on the street and be like, that's sort of strange and awful.
Yeah.
But it's not nearly as strange and awful as like kids dying in their own shit, like 10 meters from a NATO country.
Yep.
You know?
Or drowning by the hundreds.
Right, when you can just buy them tickets.
You could buy them tickets or, God forbid, send, you know, more rescue boats out to find them. You know, and they don't.
But in a way, I think the person that
they do, but very limited, and they're cutting back on rescue missions into the Mediterranean. I'm talking about the European Union.
Yeah, Italy is actually one of the only countries that stepped up in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, it has. Absolutely.
And they're carrying a lot of the burden on that.
Well, yeah, because the route has now changed. So the previous migration route, the smuggling route, mm-hmm. was from Greece.
Right.
And now that they've cut that off, now they're going from Africa, from Libya mostly, to Italy, crossing in boats that are extremely dilapidated and, like, some ridiculous number of them capsize and the refugees drown.
And it begs the question, which is, at which point, like, for advocating for quote-unquote strong borders, because we know that the Brexit camp in England we should also talk about Joe Cox at some point, the British Member of Parliament from Yorkshire, I believe.
I'm not sure.
Well, but she was a Labour Member of Parliament who was assassinated for being pro-refugee.
Oh, yeah, anyway, I remember that.
Right before she was assassinated, the pro-Brexit camp put up a poster of, like, a stream of refugees coming in and said, like, you know, how much can the EU take or whatever.
Oh, come on.
Very menacing kind of thing. And it so closely resembled, like, a very iconic piece of Nazi propaganda.
Oh, yeah?
That, yeah, it's ridiculous. And,
well, I mean, you know, it's the same mentality. It's the same, you know, us against them, dehumanization.
I think it's worse than that, though, because – sorry, go on.
No, go. You continue.
because I'm okay with them like dehumanizing ISIS or like bin Laden. Like,
ISIS,
we see that.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm saying that there's going to be some element of dehumanization in this conflict that's acceptable to me, that's acceptable to people in general. But
yes. But that goes beyond the pale.
Right. And but that's what I'm saying is that
you're dehumanizing women and children.
And you know that you are.
Who have been living in extreme suffering for a long time. And that's what kills me about the far right here and in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Although I must say I know less about the ones in Europe, but I do know lots about the ones here.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I think it's the same. It's all the same kind of brand of crazy. It's just this us against them, fear-based dehumanization of people who aren't like you. And
but it's also like what's a hero to them? You know, like Jo Cox, she was pro-refugee.
Uh-huh.
You know, she fought. She was a big advocate for Palestinian rights.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. And the principle that guided her was that she wouldn't be afraid of the threats that she got, and she wouldn't be afraid of the challenges that were posed to her. And that's what made her a hero. That's why people in Syria are celebrating her.
Yeah.
That's why Palestinians are celebrating her.
Yeah.
And that's why people in her own constituency are celebrating her, because she wasn't afraid of the challenges. So she was a hero for refugees. She was a hero
right.
for multicultural Europe.
Right.
What's a hero for the far right? The person that was the most frightened?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you saw a
it's
situation.
It's not the person who was the most frightened. No, the hero is the person who says that they're going to keep them safe.
I don't even think
that
so.
That is what it is. That's the hero. And nine times out of ten, that hero, the way they're going to keep them safe is by hurting the people who aren't like them, you know? I mean, that tends to be the trend, you know, like this us and them mentality. And then someone says, I can save you from them. Just follow me.
You could – I would argue for that if Trump walked in and like threw Baghdadi's head on the table and was like, follow me, sure. But he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to block – there's about 6,000 Syrian refugees that are slotted to come in over the next 10 years. It's 10,000 something. Whatever.
Like that,
a tiny number
yeah.
are slotted to come in over the next several years. Let's focus on that. I don't really feel – that doesn't feel like Caesar, you know, walking in and like taking charge of the situation.
I mean, I think it's a lot of things. I think it's lack of education. When I was younger, like I think I was like 14, and I had this like revelation where I told my parents, I was like, you know, I think the Republicans aren't funding education because they want to increase their voter base. This was when I was 14, and I'd say that prediction has pretty much happened. Like, I mean, it's just when you don't educate your country, when you don't educate your children, you have a much more pliable voter
I don't know,
base.
Though. Like,
you can't. No, I mean, I'm not saying it was like some grand conspiracy.
No, I know that you're not saying that, but I don't even know if like it takes that. Like, because I just wonder, like, does information even matter? Because on a certain level, like, it makes you question. The reason that I can't be sympathetic, because you know, like, if you watch like an Aaron Sorkin TV show, like The Newsroom or The West Wing,
mm-hmm.
it's always like, oh, let's put our differences as conservatives and liberals aside. America's great, yada yada. You know?
Yeah.
But I have a hard time putting myself, and that's like a typical like American view is like, despite our differences, we can see eye to eye.
Right.
But I can't really see eye to eye with people that aren't curious at all about like the world, or about if you're frightened of something, you should study it. Right. You should be obsessed with it. And
yeah.
it just seems this total pride and ignorance. Like, I don't know what country ISIS is in. I just know that I hate them more than you do. It's like, trust me, we hate them way more than you do.
But I mean, they never had the upper. I mean, I'm not. Look, some of them are just shitty people, and some of you know, like, there are shitty people on all sides, you know. But but I think the uniting factor here is that they didn't. I mean, most of these people don't know, you know, where ISIS is.
But you'd be interested. You'd think you'd be interesting. I hate Scientology, and I Google them for hours obsessively because I'm interested.
But that's you, Pat. Like, not everybody's the same. Some people are just content to live in their own little lives.
But I feel it's a moral question. If you think that you're going to kill somebody, you should learn a lot about them. You know, like, I'm good at killing flies because I fucking hate flies. And I've like, read a little bit about, like, what flies do. You know, so, like, I really want to... Yeah, yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
A fly just came by.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I really, really hate them, and
I hate them too.
Yeah. So I think that that's natural in a weird way, but these people are just like, it's strange. Like, it's, they're not even good at hating what they think they hate.
I don't get it.
It's just like an incompetence of hatred. You know, like, if you really hate ISIS, that's good. You should. Like, you really should focus that hatred, and you should use it. And it's kind of...
And not, like, take it out on women and children who you,
right.
you know, yeah.
You can't shoot straight. You're a fucking idiot.
To be fair, like, though, I mean, I think, like, it is a lot, you know, on an individual basis. Responsibility does lie in the individual to, you know, educate themselves and not be an idiot. But mm-hmm. also when the people in power are you know, it's a complex mode of information filtering that goes on in our society. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, and I think the media plays a big part, or you know, what's left of the media, sadly. And that's the problem.
Foreign correspondents. And freelance foreign correspondents
is
what's
the
left
problem.
Of the media.
Right. But that's the problem, is people are not hearing it. They're not getting it. They
don't
know.
Well, think about it. Like, okay, you were on the front lines against ISIS literally a month ago.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you feel when, like, you see some schmuck on television talking about it? Like the Republican debates, they have one issue, ISIS, and then refugees.
Right.
It's crazy.
So my problem with the – my biggest – what I want to say to everybody who talks about refugees not coming here and how they're hiding terrorists and how they're terrorists, whatever. Mm-hmm. I always want to say to them, like, you know, why don't I get you a plane ticket? You and I can go to the Baqa in Lebanon and we can visit a refugee camp. And you can sit there and you can tell those women and those children that – they're actually terrorists.
Yeah.
And until you do that, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because I have no interest in what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and that.
And it's just like, what bothers me too is this absolutism of, they're like, prove to me that ISIS could never infiltrate through refugee waves. And it's like, no, they absolutely could. But why on earth? Why on earth would you do that when you can just get a French guy with a passport who can fly into the country and go undetected?
Right.
You can get a guy who's not Muslim. Easy. A lot of them are converts.
Yep.
You know, so why would you send a guy with no weapons who can
vulnerable? For one reason and one reason alone. They want to turn people against the refugee population. They want to turn people against Muslims.
It's the only plan they
have.
That's
the plan. That's their
plan. It's the only plan. That's plan A.
They've said it so many
times.
Yeah,
they're not like –
it's crazy. It's not like it's hard. Like publicly they've been like, we love this. Like, yeah. Trump is our man. Like
when we had to fight Hitler, they were like, study this motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, find me every German-American. Mm-hmm. And get them. My grandfather's German American. You know what I mean? Well, he fought the Japanese, but like, it's like, it was find me every immigrant that knows this language and study this motherfucker and let's kill him. You know,
right.
Like there was this ruthlessness, but it was like an intelligent. It was kind of like an American, like, hey.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know. I think people will tend to look with nostalgia upon the past when, you know, but in many ways. When we've had a free and open press has been the most engaged and socially aware our population has been.
Sure.
So when you look at the great you know, stories in journalism, you look at the Watergate, the Pentagon Papers, you know, and on, that was the period when you had people in our country, civilians.
Mm-hmm.
Who cared about the world and who cared about our place in it.
I think we very much still do. I would say that.
I don't.
But I just think that we're too easy on.
I think there are many people who do, but there are more people who don't.
That might be true, but I think the fundamental flaw that we're seeing, like, this election cycle is that people don't we're too nice. Like, political correctness is ruining the country, but it's in the opposite direction than those motherfuckers say. You know, it's because no one can run up to Trump and just be like, Let's pull on your hair. Let's pull on your hair from the back, like, not the front, not the way you hold it every single time people go on it. Let's yank your hair. You know, like that guy that was running up to that jumped the barricades in like Austin or something.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure he was going for the hair. I'm sure he was trying to rip off
probably.
Trump's wig.
That would be hilarious.
You know, no doubt. But it's like, it. Just ask a question. Anyway, so the theme of our show is supposed to be sounds from history, strange sounds from history.
Yeah, I guess we've totally.
No, it's cool. Almost, we can deviate. It's all good. Yeah. This is the influence show. So, yeah, so now we're going to get what is purportedly from YouTube, a numbers station. Do you know what a numbers station is?
No.
It was these weird shortwave radio broadcasts that were like just these voices counting numbers off in like different languages.
Why?
It's like a big mystery. Presumably it's like spy stuff.
Oh.
You know, it's like coded transmissions to spies.
Interesting.
Theoretically, but they've never exactly pinned down. Like, it's generally known that
So where was this? Where did this air? When?
During the Cold War, if people would listen to shortwave radio,
mm-hmm.
you'd hear these weird automated transmitters.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know what they're for or whatever, but the idea was that, I guess, like, if there was going to be a nuclear war or something, Russia would change its transmission and then its spies would know.
Huh.
That's the idea. But it's still like a – it's a, like a fun mystery.
Okay.
So we're going to hear a – what is from YouTube, which I can't authenticate, but which is purported to be a transmission from East Germany of a number station.
Okay.
Okay. And here it comes. Sound tonight. It's very creepy, right?
Very.
So supposedly this was recorded in 1977.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know, now they don't need that stuff. Now they can just, you know, all, I mean...
East German intelligence.
Not East German intelligence, but I'm saying, you know, like, the NSA can just... click a few buttons and know all
yeah, but
about
it's not
you.
It's not as sexy as this is. I mean,
no, there's something much more dramatic about
much
it.
Much more.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I feel like spy work these days is just like, I mean, all the fun must be taken out of it. It
oh,
must all be
I disagree. I'll bet you it is fun as fuck. Still,
really?
Yeah. I mean, not morally correct, but
no, horrible. But I'm talking like if you spy on people through a computer, like it can't be as much fun as it used to be in the past.
You know what I say about the NSA spying?
What?
At least somebody's watching me masturbate.
Ew.
Good change. Okay, so yeah, that was an East German number station. So yeah, do we want to talk about that, or do we want to move on to the next clip?
I mean, we can talk about spying some more. Like
yeah, you want to talk about spying, the world
oh,
of spying.
Yeah.
Ooh. Mysterious. Okay, we can talk about the world of spying. What's new in the world of spying?
I was just talking about in general. I mean, it's so interesting to me how, you know, all the big leaks and the leakers, they've kind of like, I don't know, I feel like their leaks have lost their meaning, you know?
Because it's shit that we knew anyways.
Well, no, it's just because nobody's reading it. And also because there's been, you know, campaigns of essentially defamation. And
yeah.
I mean, what Assange is not, like a likable man.
No, he's a total scumbag.
But I don't think he's a rapist.
No, he's probably not a rapist, but he
I mean,
is a scumbag.
Super creepy, yeah.
He's
no, for
yeah, he's
sure,
a super
but, like,
creepy
I
scumbag.
I have a feeling that, like, that was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. You know, maybe, who knows, but this is what I think is so interesting about, like, I'm obsessed with, like, conspiracy theorists, though not conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah, you are. Shut up.
Well, yeah, no, definitely. But, like, what I find so interesting about it is, like, the parallel logic, because there's so many people, somebody was telling me the other day that they had a roommate that said, you know, bin Laden was killed, you know, 20 years ago, right? And then he says the next day he comes up to me and he says, you know, bin Laden's still alive, like, they never... the operation that killed him was bullshit. So he's like, so which one is it? Like, was he dead 50 years ago or is he dead now? Like, or is he still alive?
Well, I mean, those kind of conspiracy theories are obviously uneducated and, you know, misled.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. It goes to, like, lack of curiosity.
But the other thing is, I have to say something that does bother me is that, look, I'm not saying that you can treat every, you know, crackpot idea like it's, you know, like it could be true.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of cases, I feel like, you know, there's this rush, this knee-jerk reaction to be like, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, when it doesn't fit with the government's narrative. I think it happens a lot.
And I think it's more like the micro level than people think. You know what I mean? It's not like the grand war that's orchestrated. It's more like small things. It's more like something like a Gulf War syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, a lot of people are getting sick. Let's tweak the technical meaning of this so that we don't have to treat it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot less sexy than like Illuminati guys in hoods.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. You know what I mean, though. I'm talking like actual like.
But the point is that it's very boring and bureaucratic in real life. Like there's so much cloak and dagger shit that happens, but so much of it is so fucking dull.
Yeah. And now I feel like there's these, you know, like it's all done probably from a distance. There's no sense of, you know, closeness. I don't know. I imagine that there's not a whole lot of, you know, on the ground.
I think it's becoming meaningless, though, in a certain degree. Well, because it's like, you know, if you're going to spy on every American, the conclusion that you're going to get is like, oh, by spying on everyone, we've realized that people are really pissed off by the fact that we're all spying on them. Or it's like, Israeli intelligence services in the West Bank. Like, oh, we figured out that everybody fucking hates that we're here. You know, like there's a – it becomes like – you could know everything and still have that be useless. Like if you think about it, the Soviets, right, were very good at infiltrating America, actually.
Yeah, they were. They were very, very good. There's that show now.
Yeah, but they also were very good. And still now the Russians are very good at it. And, you know, that was – and you could argue that that made us vulnerable because we were an open society. So they allowed – we allowed people to visit. We allowed Russian immigrants. We encouraged Russian immigrants, actually.
Right.
Because we were smart.
Yeah.
And so we were an open society, which made us vulnerable to spying. And the Russians were able to – the Soviets were able to infiltrate the U.S. so many times with spies. They were able
to – way more than we were able to infiltrate
them.
Then
vice versa.
Right.
But in the grand scheme of things, they were fucked because we were an open society. Mm-hmm. You know, so the same thing that made us vulnerable there's some anecdotal story about somebody that was meeting with a top U.S. government official that was meeting with a Soviet government official. It's from the show Cold War. It's from the documentary Cold War. Mm-hmm. But a CNN documentary from the 90s. Mm-hmm. But he said that this like some KGB or like Russian government official was like, you know, we're fucked because of computers. Because you guys like computers. You teach like 12-year-olds to use computers. Mm-hmm. But we're afraid of them.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're like, we fear computers. So right. In the grand scheme of things, we're fucked.
I just Googled like spying news because I thought I wanted to see if there was anything else. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it doesn't matter.
So Senate likely to pass FBI spying bill after Orlando shooting. Apparently, the Republicans have backed a proposal to expand the FBI's secretive surveillance powers after the Orlando shooting at the gay nightclub. And it looks like it's probably going to go through the Senate. And it would broaden the type of telephone and internet records the FBI could request from companies like Alphabet Inc. and Verizon without a warrant. It's the one thing the Democrats and the Republicans seem to agree on because the Obama administration has tried to pass it for years. That's really terrifying. I mean, it's not like they don't have enough access to our personal lives and, you know.
I think privacy is over. I think privacy is like an ancient concept.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't exist anymore as far as I'm concerned, especially if you are a journalist, especially if you work in the Middle East, you have kissed your online internet privacy goodbye.
Yeah, but you can kind of like encourage it. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like that there's anything that I do that I wouldn't think was like funny.
I just don't give a shit.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Frankly.
All right. Anyways. Okay, so this is some more audio clips from history. Here we're going to have audio from the last minutes of the space shuttle Columbia. An interesting factoid here. This is the space shuttle Columbia that burned up on reentry in 2003. Mm-hmm. Both the first Indian astronaut and the first Israeli astronaut were aboard.
Okay.
Interesting factoid, in 1997 when I was a little kid, I saw a shuttle launch in Florida of one of the astronauts that was killed in this mission, Komplechava, who was the first Indian or Indian American in space.
Okay.
So this is purportedly from YouTube, the last minutes of the Space Shuttle Columbia's existence or reentry.
We see it out the front also. Listen,
Paul. There's good stuff out front. I'm filming overhead right now.
That's kind of dull.
Oh, it'll be obvious when the time comes.
I guess I could give you the camera to put out the front window.
Here, let's don't do that.
Okay.
Let's just go ahead and make sure you check your suit pressure integrity, too.
All right.
So everyone should know that there's video that's purported to be from this running with the YouTube clip. So you can actually see footage from inside the cockpit of the shuttle. So this is just as it's entering the atmosphere and they're starting to feel some G's because they're re-entering and it's the shuttle's slowing down, so they'll start to feel their weight again.
Right.
100th of a G.
That's the last transmission.
Jeez, that's dark.
Yeah, well, it's interesting clips from history tonight.
Yeah, it's dark.
No comment?
I don't know. What would you like me to comment on?
No,
I just found something interesting about NASA. So they are apparently funding a mission that will turn asteroids into spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
So, but not like in some way, so that the human race can find a more sustainable way of living, perhaps somewhere else. You know, these things are kind of important. You know, but so that we can then fly the asteroids to a place where we can mine them.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I want that gold. You know, I want that space gold.
I mean, that's clearly a misprioritizing that budget, no?
I want the gold!
I want the gold, not like, you know, I don't know.
Yeehaw!
Like, Oh, God, people are so dumb.
No. I want the gold. I want the space gold. Where can I invest?
Yeah, it's true. The best part is that they want 3D printers. They want to fly robots with 3D printers to asteroids, mm-hmm. have them 3D print like the necessary machinery or the necessary whatever to get the asteroids to move in the direction they want it to, which it will then fly itself to a place where people would mine it, or it will be mined.
Honestly, that sounds like a fucking great idea.
Yeah.
I'm down with it. And I want that gold. I want them space diamonds. I want that space gold.
Totally.
Okay. So our next clip is this is fun. This is really fun. This is from the United States Army Psychological Warfare Department during Vietnam.
Oh, nice.
And this is like creepy, like Vietnamese ghost stuff that they would blast at the Viet Cong and like Viet Minh soldiers.
Okay.
Come on, start. Here we go. They blast it at like Viet Cong and Viet Minh positions in the middle of the night to like keep them awake.
Oh wow.
And it has all this weird stuff about like Buddhist and Vietnamese mythology in it. Disheartening.
Disheartening indeed. I feel disheartened right now.
This is like the noises my
like
cats
surrendering,
make.
Surrendering, yeah.
This is my cats when they want to be fed at like 5 in the morning.
Well, you do have like 12
cats. Okay, wait, hang on.
So...
They have subtitles. It's like daddy, daddy is what it's saying. It says, who is that? Who is calling me? My daughter? My wife? Your father is back home with you, my daughter. Your husband is back home with you, my wife. But my body is gone. I am dead, my family. Tragic, how tragic. My friends, I come back to let you know that I am dead, I am dead. I'm in hell, just hell. It was a senseless death. How senseless, how senseless. But when I realized the truth, it was too late, too late. Friends, while you are still alive, there is still a chance that you can be reunited with your loved ones. Do you hear what I say? Go home, friends. Hurry. If not, you will end up like me. Go home, my friends, before it's too late. Go home. Vi dai ban. I don't know what that means.
Being a Viet Cong, like...
I don't think it worked.
Out in the... No, I mean, you don't sleep a whole lot in a war, and they're, like... It was a jungle. I mean, I can imagine it being
somewhat frightening.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, I'm a little...
Yeah, I'm a little creeped out by that.
And I'm not, like, lying in a jungle on no sleep.
So that's known as... Hang on one second. That's known as ghost tape number 10.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's very interesting.
That is pretty interesting.
There's a lot of horrifying stuff from history like that.
Yeah, you know the really horrible thing is, like, you know, it just got me thinking about psychological warfare and the wars that are happening right now. And it's like... There was so much more of a sense of, like, unification, I feel like, back then. I mean, now we can't – we're all too busy fighting over whether we should go to war or not. You know what I mean? It's not – it renders us, like, pretty ineffective as a – as an, you know
– fighting force?
As a fighting force and as a, you know, global power. And in general, it gives us less resources to devote to actually defeating this enemy, you know?
Mm. I think that it's like we're kind of just phoning it in, you know, because we're like, yeah, we're going to let's find a way to fight the war without really having to, like, fight it.
Yeah.
You know,
get
like
other people to fight it for us.
Kind of. But it's just sort of like if you're really, if you're really committed.
I was just in Iraq with the Peshmerga, like.
Yeah.
They're fighting. I mean, actually, you know, there are Americans.
Yeah, but it's small.
Yeah,
it's
special small forces number. There. I actually saw some of them there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I ran into a special forces team there.
They were uncomfortable around your camera, I assume.
Well, yeah, they were not happy to see me. And the commanding officer was wearing full Peshmerga.
I think it's
full Kurdish tribal dress.
That's another thing that drives me nuts about some fucking conspiracy theorists. So they're like, America's funneling weapons to Nusra. I'm like, really? Then why is it that there's U.S. special forces embedded that you can take pictures of that are with the Peshmerga? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, or
no,
that are with the YPG.
It's not that simple. Yeah.
Now, I understand that it's not that simple. But my point is that it's just really funny that like a lot of these conspiracy theories are based on sort of like assumptions that are. It's just really strange that they're treating some of the groups that...
Look at the Orlando shooter. He was expressing support for ISIS and Hezbollah, and that's interesting because they're at war. I mean, it's just...
Like, joining ISIS, if like, getting married was as easy as, like, declaring victory to, like, ISIS, society would collapse. Like, he just called in and he was like, yay, I'm ISIS, wow.
Wow. Like, no, I mean, it's horrible. Like, the thing is, I think... I don't know. I mean, I can't say that I know enough about it, but I do know that you know, had he been in Raqqa and they found out that he was on Grindr, I mean, not that there's, I guess, much of a Grindr scene in Raqqa, but he would have been murdered.
Was he on Grindr?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, people, I think the conversation is over whether he, you know, was on it to sort of stake out thing. But he also went to the club that he shot up many times.
Yeah.
So, you know, the argument is between whether he was just going there to scope out where he wanted to commit his terrorism or he was going there because he was actually gay and deeply repressed about it. Yeah.
It's weird, though. I mean, there's so many strains to this particular incident that...
Well, something that Reza Aslan said to me once in a story that I wrote, which I thought was really smart... I'm paraphrasing here, but he was basically like he's a prominent religious scholar and author, and he said to me, you know, when the person who carries out terrorism is white, for example, Robert Deere, who shot up the Planned Parenthood clinic, people are a lot more willing to think about his psychological state when he committed the terrorism. They talk about his family, they talk about his childhood, they talk about why he did the things he did and how, and they put his act of terrorism to some context. Now, that's not to say that, you know, anybody is approving of it, but they put it into context. And when the shooter at hand is Muslim or Arab, every other factor that could have possibly played a role in that is completely subsumed by the fact that they're Muslim.
Right.
So this man, you know... Whatever he was, I seriously doubt he was like a hardened ISIS fighter, you know?
Definitely not. He was more like a George Zimmerman.
Yeah. Well,
I think that
the point is that, like, I think the real danger now that we have going on here is that anybody can say they're ISIS. I can say I'm ISIS. You can say you're ISIS. And, you know, we do,
it's not like they're carrying membership cards, you know, like.
Yeah, well, I just threw up all over a ballroom. I claim it in the name of ISIS. Like, it can't be that easy. That's what my problem is with
but,
it.
But I mean, but that's what they want.
And you can't take it seriously.
And we're just making it easier for them.
The guy shot up the theater in Aurora said that he was the Joker. You know, like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
At the Batman premiere, yeah, like, he claimed that he was a Joker. And that's about as connected to reality as that guy saying that he was ISIS.
Agreed, but I mean,
I do it in the name of Batman or whatever.
To like, the average Joe American, like they don't understand that kind of distinction because there's no one telling them, Pat. Because
but that's what's you know what's so interesting is that there's two concepts that a lot of these people don't understand, which is like freedom and courage. You know, they're like, well, you know, of course, all gay people who we've talked shit about and demonized and tried to steal rights from for years are going to now flock to us when they've been attacked once because everyone is a coward like we are.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah, all suddenly these, all these Republicans right. are like, you know,
on the right, they really LGBT think that activists. Like, no, the second something terrifying happens to the gay community, like they've survived like AIDS. Like,
yeah,
I'm sorry. This is like this is something that like that community can still like keep itself together afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just because
like,
these
that
people
community is remarkably resilient. I'm
just because these people that criticize gay people before this incident think. Just because they're cowards doesn't mean that everyone else is. And it's just amazing to me that like someone like Trump really thinks that LGBT Americans are going to like flock to him because they're frightened. It's like, oh, yeah, thank you. You know, yeah, we don't care that like you're against us being allowed to marry. We don't care that you're against the partner of one of the victims being allowed to visit a victim of the terrorist attack in the hospital because you don't believe in gay marriage.
Right, exactly.
You know, you don't think we should be able to – so, you know, you can't predict whether or not someone's going to die.
Right.
But you, in that case, don't want me to be able to visit my partner in the hospital.
Yeah.
It's basically – like, you really think those people are going to go for you? Bullshit. And it just – it goes to the root of how little they understand about democracy and about courage, really. You know?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's incredible. They're like, no, but don't you understand that ISIS wants to kill you? Yes. Like, yes, we do.
Yes, we understand better than
we
most people.
Do understand
you know?
That.
I mean, I think just in general, the state of things is pretty bleak. And it's just – I just don't understand how – you're right. It's a lack of curiosity. And mm-hmm. it's a retreat to where it feels safe. You know, you want safety. People want safety. I mean, you and I don't.
I don't think it's that. I think it's pride and cowardice. I think if you want real safety, I think Hillary Clinton, as evil and horrible as she is, she exudes competence. She really does. Like, she's very intelligent and she knows a lot about, like, the intelligence services and the military. She has read up on that shit very extensively.
But she's also a woman. It does play a role.
Okay. Sure. But my point is that a person that's really interested in the safety of their family is going to – it's dangerous. These absolutist concepts are dangerous.
She's a woman. She doesn't make them feel safe.
Okay, that might be like psychological prediction.
No,
but
it's
still,
very deeply psychological.
Still,
subconscious.
If the plane
I'm
on
like
is crashing,
her either. I don't like her either. Like to be fair, but like I do think that there's something to the whole idea that you know a woman in times of crisis doesn't seem as
even if I'm a shithead sexist, right? And the plane is crashing, I'm like find me a pilot. I'm not like find me a guy who can't fly the plane.
Yeah, you are, Pat. Again, you are not
but,
everybody.
Of course, I'm not. But what I'm saying is that it's a very dark,
unique, in a very twisted way.
It's a very dark obsession with very specific circumstances, like torture, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we promised that in the incredibly rare circumstance under which we would capture one of these people alive in any circumstance where they would have any information broadening beyond their own
right, because they're
immediate
all kept
circle.
Cells, yeah.
Right, because they're all cells. And then on top of it, even if they do know, because operational security of terrorists says that within a certain period of time of someone being held, they're going to change the way that they move. So if they know that you've captured somebody, even if you torture the fuck out of them, that information is not going to be good after a certain amount of time. So it's interesting to me that these people are obsessed on such an unlikely scenario. You know, like imagine if the head of the FAA went to Congress and was like, listen, I don't really care about like doing maintenance or inspection on any of the aircraft that Americans fly, right? But I promise you that if an aircraft is crashing, you will have the right to fight a henchman for his parachute. Right, you'll have. I'm saying it's an incredibly unlikely scenario.
What is the capturing of a
the capturing of someone that has information that you can torture out of them that will lead to winning a war?
Right,
well, it has never happened and will never happen ever. Okay,
and I don't know about that, Pat. I think that's
well, winning
a
until winning a war, that like, the difference between winning and not winning is
that.
Torture.
You
no,
don't know
I'm
that.
Sorry, it's competence and it's hard work and it's a lot.
It probably has been, Pat. Like to be fair, like somebody probably won a war because they tortured someone before in history.
I would be flabbergasted.
Okay, but you should make sweeping general statements like that without.
I think I can
do
make
your
it.
Research. We'll come back with this.
I'll come back and say that I'm right, that torture has never flipped the tables for any war, and it won't. That's not the point.
All right, we'll come back to that.
Okay. Anyways, but the point is that it's sad to like be so focused on something that's so unlikely and specific.
Well, I mean, well, even focusing on terrorism itself. I mean,
no, because that's scary.
It is scary. No, believe me, I know that it's scary. I mean, my father was kidnapped for 7 years by terrorists. It's not like I don't know that these people have, you know, the ability to hurt Americans. Like 100%, they do. But the point is that, you know. I'm not sure what the stats are now like after Orlando, but in general, I mean, white supremacist terrorism incidents of white supremacist terrorism vastly outnumber those by Muslim terrorists.
Well, if you think about it,
so you're much more likely to get killed by a white person. 100%,
but even if you weren't, I'm still against it. That was my point. Is even if 90% of terrorism was committed by Muslims, I'm still against racial profiling.
100%.
And that's the thing that I think a lot of these people don't fucking understand. And it's like. It's strange to me because why not apply it to anything else?
Because
Catholic priests, there's incredibly high levels of molestation within the Catholic Church. It used to be a pedophile factory. I've never heard any of these people say that, oh, well, you know, because Catholic priests are so likely to molest children, we should block Catholic priests. But it's the exact same logic, and there's much more data to back that than saying you should block Muslims, but you never fucking hear it. You know, well, should we block men because they're more violent than women?
Back to my spiel on the media. You know, and I take this very personally because I'm a journalist and so are you. And it's people need to talk about the state of the media right now because it's quite frankly fucking horrendous. And I think the point is that, you know, the media is not doing its job of reflecting reality.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, so for people to say, you know, so let's say the vast majority, for example, of terrorism is committed by white supremacists in America.
Right.
How much coverage is devoted to white supremacist terrorism and how much of it is devoted to terrorism committed by Muslims? I mean, look, I'm not saying that you shouldn't cover terrorism committed by Muslims. You should. But you should cover the other kinds of terrorism, too, and provide some sort of context for your viewers and your readers.
Well, it goes to the whole.
So my point is that, like, you know, I think a free press, an open press is essential to the health of a society. I think you can't possibly have a healthy society when you have an ignorant society. And mm-hmm. I think that's what's happening now because news organizations are running out of money. They're closing foreign bureaus. They pay freelancers exploitative fees.
Mm.
And it's just, it's gradually the information we're getting is disappearing and it's becoming inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say that the noble exception is I do think that foreign correspondents who are freelancers are producing better work than has ever been produced.
Well, they it's have
just that
to.
Right. They have to. But it's just that the D.C. coverage is – the divide incredible.
But it's that people can't afford to freelance.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're getting paid $200, $300 a story, you cannot – you can't pay for fixers. You can't do things to keep yourself safe. You are essentially and you can't make a living doing that like perfectly honestly, especially not a living that forces you to risk your life for $200.
Oh yes.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. So people just aren't doing it because they can't. I mean, the only people who do it are people like you and me, who are, you know.
Yeah, but I can't do it anymore. Like, I don't know.
It's brutal.
Anyways, we have a minute and a half left, so I'm gonna play you the. A minute and a half of the Jonestown suicide tape.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, horrible, but like, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Put down your life with your child, but don't do this.
All the best to you.
Free at last. Peace. Keep your emotions down. Keep your emotions down.
So the term to drink the Kool-Aid comes from this because it was a mass suicide in Guyana with a sort of like radical preacher named Jim Jones who recruited a bunch of his followers to commit suicide. And this is an audio recording.
And they put poison in the Kool-Aid, right? Yep. Yeah. It's
never been done before, you say. It's been done by every tribe in history. Every tribe facing annihilation. All the Indians of the Amazon are doing it right now. They refuse to bring any babies into the world. They kill every child that comes into the world because they don't want to live in this kind of a world. So be patient, be patient. Death is, I tell you, I don't care how many screams you hear, I don't care how many anguished cries, death is a million times preferable to 10 more days of this life. If you knew what was ahead of you, if you knew what was ahead of you, you'd be glad to be stepping over tonight. Death, death.